Hello and welcome to Animal Voices. You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM. I am your host, Lauren Corman, here with Carl Orzechowski, as per usual, bringing us the news. Today's program, we are going to be reaching an activist in Montreal who's actually an Ecuadorian activist with the group Anima Naturalis. And if you're interested in checking out that website, it's animanaturalis.org. We're going to be finding out about animal activism in Ecuador and about the recent constitutional assembly and the efforts that animal activists were trying to put forward to amend the constitution. So we'll hear more about that from Paula Gilbert. But before we turn to that interview at about quarter after, we're going to hear some news with Carl.
Thanks, Lauren. The first news story coming to us today is coming from CBC News. The headline is a startling one. It is, PEI says fish kills in rivers could be extensive. Decaying aquatic plants have caused a severe shortage of oxygen in at least 13 PEI waterways and killed large numbers of fish, environment officials say. And they think the problem is likely larger still. Cindy Crane, a biologist with the PEI Environment Department, told CBC News Tuesday the largest fish kills seem to have occurred in the Wheatley River, but rivers all over the province are suffering. The government on Tuesday reported the anoxic conditions, a lack of dissolved oxygen in the water caused by large amounts of rotting vegetation. Excess nitrates in the water act as a fertilizer that combines with the hot weather to cause disproportionate growth in aquatic vegetation. As the plants die and decompose, they use up their oxygen in the water, which turns milky, white, or green, and gives off a rotten egg smell, and fish die. Quote, "We don't really have a value or an actual number," said Crane. It did appear to be fairly significant. Very numerous numbers of fish, mostly mummy chogs and killifish, and smaller finfish and some eels and flatfish, those types of things, she said. Officials know about significant mortality of fish and shellfish in the past week in Cardigan River in eastern PEI and the Wheatley River in the north-central part of the province. Other rivers with problems found by Tuesday included the Hunter, French, Mill, and Montague. On Wednesday, the province added the Trout, Stanley, Granville, and Southwest rivers to the list. Some of this week's events were reported by the public, while others were discovered by Environment Department staff. Crane said there are probably more affected estuaries that haven't been reported yet. Environment officials will be working Wednesday to determine the extent of the current problem, but anoxic events are an annual occurrence with deep underlying causes. A joint federal-provincial commission is currently studying the problem of nitrates in PEI's water. An interim report released earlier this month said any solution to the problem of nitrates in the island's water would take decades. Unlike previously reported fish kills on PEI, which were mass poisonings caused by washing of pesticides into rivers by heavy rains, the aquatic blooms caused by excess nitrates may have many causes, the interim report says. Fertilizers from farmers' fields and golf courses, septic systems, and other human development along rivers are all sources of nitrates. Environment Minister George Webster was quick Wednesday morning to point out the difference between the two types of fish kills. Quote, "Oh no, this is absolutely not runoff from fields. It's probably caused to some extent by nitrate levels higher in the water table and phosphate levels," said Webster. "They're coming from fields, yes, they're coming from sewer systems, from human activity," he said. The carcasses of dead fish will likely not be removed from either of the fish kill sites, Webster said. Environment officials were out Wednesday morning investigating the rivers and taking water samples. While current events give these research trips a certain urgency, officials have been investigating rivers for similar problems in the weeks around the end of July every year since 2001. And the next story, staying in Canada, but going to the other coast, this story is coming to us from the Victoria News website, vicnews.com. The headline is, "Fur Flies Between Animal Rights Groups." It was vegan versus vegan on Douglas Street Thursday as two animal rights organizations squared off over a display of fake chicken meat and real human flesh. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals had two scantily clad activists standing in the rain trying to lure customers into a Kentucky Fried Chicken franchise on Douglas Street Thursday. The group has been on a Canada-wide promotional campaign promoting Kentucky Fried Chicken's new vegetarian sandwich, after the restaurant bowed to years of pressure over their supplier's treatment of poultry bound for the chain's deep fryers. But the two pita lettuce ladies, dressed in green bikinis and handing out free sandwiches, were met by three protesters. Quote, "We don't think it's appropriate for PETA to be out promoting KFC. I've gotten two emails from them in the last week telling me to go eat at KFC," said David Shishkoff, Victoria coordinator for U.S.-based organization Friends of Animals. Quote, "As a vegan and an animal rights activist, I think it's an abomination because they kill so many chickens." Wielding a sign with a pun reading, "Let us respect women and animals," Shishkoff said the Lettuce Lady campaign, which has also featured ads with Ladysmith native Pamela Anderson, is, quote, "basically turning women into meat as well, which I think is really inappropriate." Lettuce Lady Nicole Matthews from Michigan said she was comfortable using her figure to move PETA's message. Quote, "As a young woman, I choose to use my body to promote animal rights. It's an eye-catching way to grab attention. In today's media market, sex sells, and cruelty to animals is not something most people really want to think about." Matthews said KFC's decision to offer a vegetarian sandwich should be welcomed. Quote, "It's giving people a cruelty-free choice by having a vegetarian sandwich on the menu," said Matthews, seeming as unfazed by the protest as she did by the cold, wet weather. Shishkoff said PETA, which still maintains a website called KentuckyFriedCruelty.com, calling for a boycott of KFC, could have expressed its congratulations by writing a letter, not carrying out a continent-wide publicity blitz on the restaurant's behalf. Quote, "In Victoria, we have two vegan restaurants. Why aren't they telling people to go and eat there?" he asked. And finally, this is a message coming from courtesy of Paula Stebe from the Association Against Animal Factories in Austria. They have, in the past few months, had close to a dozen of their members jailed, and they remain in custody on no charges. This is a message from Elmar, one of the prisoners. "Brothers and sisters, dear animal movement, dear supporters of our cause. Today, on the 90th birthday of anti-apartheid activist Nelson Mandela, who spent 30 years in jail fighting for his noble cause, I received the statement of prolongation of our imprisonment. It's obvious that they don't want to acknowledge our arguments. Anything you say, they misinterpret and press into their fantastic constructs of criminal organization. So even ALF buttons or stickers are used to prove our quote-unquote criminal potential. But we don't need to wonder. We did know before that their only goal is not truth and not justice, but only to conserve the speciesist status quo. After all, the policemen and women, the general attorney, and the judge are not vegan for sure. So what to expect from a biased court? But I don't want to complain. At least now we have learned and adapted to the situation of our helplessness. They decide what they want, and power makes right. But what I want to say with my broken English is again a very, very big thank you for all your support. Until now, I received more than 100 letters and postcards from all over the world. I try my best to answer every single one of them, but forgive me if you didn't receive a personal answer. Some avoid to put their name and address on their mail, so I can't read it, so answering is impossible. But one thing is true for all of you. Your letters, thoughts, and support from Austria, Germany, France, Italy, Norway, Sweden, UK, Finland, Switzerland, Croatia, Serbia, Slovenia, the Netherlands, Colombia, the United States, New Zealand, and Japan give us the power we need to hold out. Thank you. There's no need to tell you that prison is nothing in comparison to everyday horrors in an animal's hell, cynically called humane, but better to say anthropocentric society. We are not murdered by a chance of 50%, dehorned or castrated fully conscious within the first days of our lives. We are neither force-fed or squeezed into cages, bound to the floor, nor are we deported and murdered after reaching puberty. To be clear, prison is neither luxury nor a hotel. There is vegan food, far from perfect, but you can eat it. Today we had some fake meat, for example. Most probably the very welcomed effect of VPSG work. Thank you very much. The hardest things for me are deprivation of social contact and deprivation of movement. Only 1 hour a day walking in circles on the basketball square and not talking to your friends are endangering our bodies and minds' health. The rest of jail life I share with Toby the toilet and Billy the wardrobe on 7.8 square meters. Still avoiding brainwashing myself by watching one of the three TV channels, I try to read and make sports as much as possible. But I have to assert that motivation for doing anything actively goes down, and that's no good sign. Nevertheless, there is certainty that we will come out one day for sure, and there is hope that we can carry on animal rights work together soon. and love for liberation, Elmar. And that is the news.
Great. Thanks, Carl. You're listening to Animal Voices, CIUT 89.5 FM. I should mention that we have a website, animalvoices.ca. You can hear this program or any of our 250 now, something like that, archive shows. They're online, animalvoices.ca. You can download them for free. We'd love to see you on Facebook. We have a Facebook group. It's a great place to join in order to get press releases in advance, find out what's coming up on the shows, or to get other information about the program. So you just go to facebook.com and key in Animal Voices, and please do join. So we're going to take a short break. We'll come back with Paula Gilbert, an Ecuadorian activist. Talk to her about animal activism in Ecuador. Please stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to the show. Today we're speaking with Paula Gilbert, who is an activist with AnimaNaturalis.org, if you want to check out the website. We're going to be finding out about all the major things that have been going on in Ecuador in terms of animal issues and the efforts that were made with the Constitutional Assembly to improve animal rights, to create animal rights, I suppose, in Ecuador. And we're very pleased today to welcome Paula Gilbert, who will give us an overview of animal issues in Ecuador and tell us what people can do to get involved. Anima Naturalis is quite an amazing organization. They're not just in Ecuador. And so we'll find out about some of the other Latin American places that they have their fingers in as well. So, Paula, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you, Lauren.
So, good morning. So before we get started about the group that you're involved with, can you tell us a little bit about who you are and how you came to animal rights issues?
Yes, I started volunteering for an organization named FADA, Friends for Animals Foundation, in 2005. Before that, I had already been a vegetarian, and I had started for health reasons. But when I started volunteering in rescue and all that, I started doing it for compassionate reasons. So we have, in Guayaquil, in Ecuador, we have lots of stray animals, cats and dogs mainly. So they really needed our help, and that's how everything started. And then we took part of Anima Naturalis, which is this huge organization. And basically, it was straight animals which took me there. Mm.
When we talked yesterday, you mentioned a little bit about bullfighting and how that was an issue that kind of maybe changed your perspective a little bit or inspired you in a particular direction in terms of animal issues.
Yes. That widened the perspective, of course, because we didn't expect that to happen in Guayaquil in 2005. It is a city that has no, I can just quote it, has no culture of bullfighting, no taste for that at all. So it happened in October 2005, and since the organization I was volunteering for didn't want to get involved in any kind of protest against bullfighting, because there were interests created. The mayor supported this event that was going to take place by that time, which did take place. So that's when my colleagues and I realized that we needed a different kind of activism, to be more on the streets, to give more information, to try to get more activists to join us, people opposing these cruel traditions, cruel practices, and that animals are threatened in many, many areas, not just the stray animals. And so this definitely broadened our perspective.
And so was that the founding moment for Anima Naturalis, or was that your entry into the group? I'm confused about whether or not the organization existed before 2005.
The organization was created in Spain in 2003. It already existed in some other countries, and we have it in Argentina, Chile, Colombia, Spain, of course, Spain, Mexico, Uruguay, Venezuela. So one of my colleagues had already been in contact with them, and they were proposing, yes, let's create a group in Ecuador. So that was one of the first actions of Anima Naturalis in Ecuador when it was being created in 2005, protesting against the bullfighting taking place in our home city, Guayaquil in that case. So I had already been a part of FADA, Friends for Animals Foundation, and then I took part of Anima Naturalis with other actions and supporting other areas, working on other areas, not just trade animals and rescue.
Can you take us back to 2005 then with the protests that started against bullfighting? How did people respond to the message of the group?
Most of the people are against it. Like, they were really shocked about it. You know, the city hall, they expected that. They expected people not supporting that massively because there's no tradition there. And that's when we received lots of support from people regarding that, but they didn't do that much of publicity. So people were very skeptical of that happening there, and when that indeed happened, they supported us, and people that went into the show, if you can call it like that, when they went outside, they said, you know what, you're right, you're doing the right thing, and this is not going well, and just looking at policemen forcing young people to stay away from the doors and all of that, you know, it was violence in many aspects on those days. It was a whole weekend protesting and all that. So even if it was a harsh situation, good decisions come from there. So then we even created an event, which was our first cultural meeting against bullfighting, and so many actions came from there. There's so many issues going on.
So what have been some of the major ways then that you've protested bullfighting? You mentioned it sounds like people were actually outside of the bullfights themselves. Were there also tabling events or conferences, or what are some of the other things that people have done with Anima Naturalis to protest bullfights?
Yes, with other groups, we did some press conferences showing the media what goes on during a bullfight. All of that was reported on newspapers and television, and we also did we also signed petitions and got information tables. And on that day when that happened, people used posters, and there were people even disguised as black cats, because bullfighters, they are very superstitious and they believe black cats give them a bad chance. So even that happened up to that extent, just to create some awareness. And basically what other groups do, like PETA.
You mentioned, too, when we talked, that one of the other issues that often gets associated with tradition and that is a concern of Anima Naturalis is cockfighting.
Cockfighting is extended along the coastline of Ecuador, and it's huge. There, you know, people of all socioeconomic backgrounds, they join for that, and they bed on their best roosters and all that. But most of the people that really get income from that are the ones that are richer. So it's very violent. They don't feel that that much of guilt or anything about it, just because the roosters are the ones fighting. And but you know, it's something where humans are influencing that. So some people do they do it just as a means to have some income for their families and all that. But it's not all the time just the only activity they can do or to create their living or anything. So it happens, it does happen, and I can say that along the highlands, it's bullfighting what goes on, and everything related to bulls or cows being used for these cruel traditions there.
Can you actually describe cockfighting for people who maybe don't know what the practice actually looks like?
Yes, You have to imagine a rooster being locked in a cage of where he can only turn himself. And they kind of shave the legs of the rooster, and they feed them sometimes even with meat itself, knowing that it's not a carnivorous animal. And that's the way they train them. They keep them locked and separated, not socializing or dealing with other roosters, which they would normally do in their life. Just to create that anger and that feeling of not being comfortable, and that creates this violence that they are going to show later on their shows and all that. They put together the roosters, and they start picking on each other. They use some kind of tool on the legs of the rooster, so, and they can also use, of course, their kicks to bite each other. And there are roosters that can be used for many fights, and it will depend on the one that performs more violently, the one that's the angriest, and the best. And it's a very depressing environment. There are children watching that. There's no restriction for that. There's alcohol being sold. And they all do it in the name of tradition and culture.
Can we talk more about that then, tradition and culture? Because I think that it's one of the stickier issues that animal activists have to face, that people will feel threatened that somehow their culture is being eroded, and with the increasing dominance of the North and the West, for example, people feeling that their culture is already being eroded, or the influences of colonialism, etc. Can you respond to people's concerns that animal activists such as yourself coming in saying this is wrong, wanting the abolition of this industry, would in effect be eroding an important part of, for example, I guess in this case, Ecuadorian culture?
I don't think violence can ever be justified under tradition. That's just not the argument to recall at all. There have been so many traditions along the history of humanity which are brutal, and they have finally been abolished, and we are, I cannot say the world is better now, because we still got so many traditions and wrong things going on, but we cannot say that we progress if we keep them. Are they good for us? Are they useful? Are they something that's going to be a benefit for our children in the future or anything? No. So I don't think a tradition can be an argument for that. And that's the problem that Spain and Portugal and even France have nowadays, to abolish bullfighting. Tradition is the main, if not the only argument to be claimed.
Sometimes people, there's a perception, I think, that animal activism, animal rights activism in particular, is it's a Western or a Northern phenomenon. It's strictly for white people, middle class or upper class people. And when we were talking about this on the phone last night, you said, when I asked you about whether or not people would think that you're being influenced by this dominant Western Northern culture, you said that your influences in terms of animal rights aren't coming from those sources necessarily.
That's right. We have issues there. We are working on them. And of course, there is a good example coming from North America, because there are better economies and maybe more time to dedicate to those issues, and more awareness, even more. But that's not necessarily what goes on there. And down there we have compassion. We see things that are not being dealt with in the right way. And everything is born from this need of change that we feel has to happen. I mean, change has to happen for animals down there. I mean, they are, if we are talking in a hierarchical level and all that, animals are on the bottom, even below that. So that's where the need comes from.
When I asked you about when animal rights started in Ecuador, you said that it wasn't with necessarily the founding of the group, but about animals that were living on the street and people reaching out to them. Can you tell us more about some of the ways that citizens have responded to street animals and the overpopulation issues?
Yes, it definitely started with these organizations caring about stray animals, let's say about 20 years ago. Because there is no real organization like here, the SPCA, dealing with that. I don't know if here the SPCA gets funds, state funds or anything. Maybe not.
Yeah.
Okay. But anyways, we have independent organizations with private funds working for that there. And that's the first thing that happened. People tending to work for that cause, not necessarily people who are vegan, but people who are enough compassionate as to see that a starving dog on one street being mistreated by a bunch of people, or, for example, cats in a cemetery being shot at just for being there, abandoned. People started to mobilize, to work for that. And that's how it started, this notion of animal rights, of animal protection. And people are, I don't say they are more aware now, but things are tending to improve thanks to the presence of some organizations and thanks to some campaigns that we have had the opportunity to organize in order to promote sterilization and the importance of taking care of your animals the right way. There are so many things that I wish were not permitted, like, for example, animals being sold in stores and all that. That's still going on.
So that's obviously, breeding is still an issue then in Ecuador,
yes.
Obviously. That's part of the overpopulation problem.
Yes, of course.
Can you tell us a bit more about some of the groups besides Anima Naturalis? Are there other people that you work with in Ecuador that are tackling animal issues as well?
Yes. We got FADA, Friends for Animals Foundation, which is based in Guayaquil. We also have ARCA, which is that comes from, the noise ARC. And it's based in the Cuenca. And there are some other groups that focus on promoting vegetarianism and a healthy lifestyle, a peaceful lifestyle. And those groups also join us in terms of defending animal rights sometimes. Those are basically the groups I can tell you of now. Mm.
One of the things that I've read about Ecuador is how biologically diverse it is, and we had talked a little bit about environmentalism and animal issues in Ecuador, and you were making the distinction between environmental arguments and animal arguments, and it sounds like there's a lot of money and interest in conservation efforts, for example, around turtles and that kind of work, but it sounds like it's been important for you in the group to differentiate your goals from the conservation-based goals.
Yes, an environmentalist could perfectly tell you that, if you don't surpass the limit to hunt, let's say 15 of the individuals of one species, then that's fine. Of course, us as animal rights activists, we're going to say, no, it's alive, let's respect it. And we don't believe that much in human intervention in nature. And also, those environmental activists which eat meat, knowing the environmental impact of doing so, they simply don't convince us. Mm-hmm. And yes, definitely there is interest in preserving the fauna in Ecuador, like, for example, in Galapagos Island, which that represents is huge. And, of course, sometimes domesticated animals, they're the ones, the victims of the situation. Goats are being hunted and killed in thousands a year to defend the species that really belong to that area. And in the case of this very famous turtle judge, $25,000 are being invested just to recreate the species and all that. So definitely there is a lot of interest and will regarding that preservation. And also in continental Ecuador, it does happen up to certain extent. But when it comes to domesticated animals, animals used as food, animals used for clothing and entertainment, and the stray, so the story is totally different.
I know food animal issues are a big part of what the group concentrates on. Can you tell us about some of the conditions that animals face in Ecuador? I think maybe people would still think that factory farming hasn't come to Ecuador to the extent that it has in North America. Is that the case?
It does. We got factory farming in Ecuador. We got pigs being boiled alive and cows being shot, and they don't necessarily die in a second or anything. We don't have any rules and any regulations stating this is the way they should be killed, which is more humane, or anything like that at all. Things that have changed in that area are just that for the sake of human health, they try to make everything as clean as possible, and that the meat is very well checked before sale and all that. But up to the rest now, there are huge companies like Lumbrow. And of course, there is brutality in factory farming there. But in other farms, which are not like a factory, which are not industrialized, I cannot say that the situation is better. Both are brutal in a different way.
For people who are wondering where you get your information from, how are you drawing your conclusions about what happens to animals that are being raised for food?
There are documentaries that have been made. There's the media investigations. There's also people, there are witnesses and all that. But if we go beyond that, me as a vegan, you then justify just that killing just because it's being done humanely. I'd say not because the bullet is more effective. It is not violence anymore. It's still a living. It's still a being, a sentient being. So, yes, that happens. That still happens there, and there's a lot to do.
Is Ecuadorian, I know there's many different cultures involved, so it's not fair to just call it one culture that informs or is part of Ecuador, but can you talk a bit about food practices and dietary practices in Ecuador? Is it very largely meat-based, and if so, then how do people respond to a vegetarian or vegan message?
Most of the typical foods we have are meat-based, but we also have so many other alternatives. Along the coastland, we have a huge variety of fruits and vegetables. We got plantains, which are delicious. People even love them around here. And we also got corn on the highlands and, yeah, as well as the coast. And there are so many dishes that can be made with vegetable-based products. And it's just that it's not as easy for a vegetarian or a vegan to survive in Ecuador because there hasn't been a real industry created. If you go to a supermarket in Ecuador, yes, you can find soy milk, but you cannot find the soy milk of the quality you can find here, for example, and as delicious as it is. And regarding mock meats, for example, to offer them an alternative, there are, but most of them are of a Taiwanese style. They have been prepared by Taiwanese families that have settled in Guayaquil. We need more alternatives and all that. I can understand some people who say, oh, it's so difficult for me just to go and because it's not like they always offer you those options when you go to a mall or a supermarket. And if you're not enough convinced or enough compassionate or aware of this issue, or forget it. You're going to continue being eating a meat-based food. Mm.
Can you take us back to the food industry in Ecuador and just talk more about what laws? It sounds like what you're saying is there are no laws that regulate how people treat animals within factory farms or in the transportation or slaughter of the animals. Is that true?
There are no laws created in those terms, just in terms of checking that the meat is using a good condition and it passes through all the checkings and that it's safe to be eaten. But mm-hmm. no rules to protect the animal as a sentient being, being well-treated in that case.
What about other animals, not quote-unquote food animals, but other animals? Are there any animal cruelty laws on the books? Can people be charged with animal cruelty?
There are some regulations created in cities like, for example, Quito and Guayaquil. And I can say specifically the one that's in Guayaquil. It's not it's a good regulation, but the problem is that you cannot penalize those people who have committed a crime, for example. So it's not very practical. You cannot take it to reality. There are just some norms and some regulations of what can be done, cannot be done. But when you take it to the real life, the criminals, they get their way. Mm-hmm. And there is not a big interest on the part of the city hall to develop this even more. Because they don't think strays are a priority there, not yet. Hmm.
You had we had originally been in correspondence when there was a lot of interest in the Constitutional Assembly. What was the assembly about, and what were animal activists trying to accomplish through the Constitutional Assembly?
So, with the new government of Ecuador, there is this proposal to create a new constitution. And for that, there was an election of more than 100 members for the assembly. And that already happened in 2007, and they had around 10 months to write a new constitution. And they always said that this was going to be open, that this time they were going to listen to all these groups which defend different causes. And yeah, they opened the doors for that. There were animal rights activists, of course, the ones of Anima Naturalis. There were people from FAD as well, and working for that, and everybody believed things were on the right track. And a group of organizations like ARCA and FADA and Anima Naturalis, among others, which also defend other causes, but support these animal rights cause as well, they proposed an article to be included in the Constitution, which would have made Ecuador the second or the third country in the world to include animal rights under constitutional terms. And it was the state will protect and defend the life of every animal species, banning all kind of illegal traffic and cruel treatment against them. So it was pretty clear, pretty broad, an article to start from and create in the future laws which would let us abolish bullfighting and defend and rescue the stray animals and create better conditions for animals use as consumption, and even promote vegetarianism and veganism to abolish all meat consumption. But of course that happened later on. But some members of the assembly which showed support for this started to see that there were some interest, created financial interest from bullfighters in Quito, because bullfighting in Quito is huge, especially in December. And if you go to that city during that month, you'll see everybody has become Spanish, not Ecuadorian anymore. So they saw all of that opposition from strong, powerful groups. And even if people supported that hugely on their website, they could see that. They could see that the comments, most of the comments, there were comments for that, for this cause, and there weren't any comments for, you know, the abortion issues that were addressed or anything like that. So just creating some kind of article to defend animal rights at a constitutional level, that it was huge. Like, it gave hope to so many people who care for this cause or who are or who sympathize, just sympathize. But then they just dropped it, and what they offered was to create this article which states, the law will regulate the conditions for animal welfare. This protection cannot be claimed to ban or restrict ancestral rights or cultural practices.
Hmm.
Okay, this last part, that's the open door for animal cruelty. That would be almost like legalizing bullfighting, cockfighting, and all of these practices in Ecuador. What's an ancestral right? Killing a cow and using the skin of the cow to put it on? Because that's a tradition that goes on in Ecuador, somewhere in the highlands. So that would be perfectly supported and motivated. What if some people do witchcraft using a cat as an offer to their gods or whatever? That would be supported as well as a cultural practice. So very, very dangerous. And what this group, Anima Naturalis, PADA, and ARCA did was just to say, if you're going to include that, you better not include anything at all. Because the least we expected was for you to care for animals used as entertainment and used for cruel traditions. At the least, defend those. If you are not going to care for animals used as consumption, for consumption, and if you are not going to care about stray animals, at least care about those who are being treated of just mistreated just for fun, and those who, because there's a whole environment of violence on those rides, bullfighting, cockfighting. Moreover, they try to include this article in a section of the Constitution, of this proposal of Constitution, which is named the Rights of Nature. So on that section, they defend the mountain, they defend the river, they recognize that the nature has rights because it's got cycles and we have to protect it and all of that. But they don't name not even a single word stating animals. They just talk about elements of nature, elements, which gives you a sense of something not just something not a not living being, a sun.
You had mentioned yesterday that the effect of claiming these rights or promoting the respect for nature, I think people would think, initially, well, that sounds like a good thing, but your argument yesterday was that this, in effect, this kind of rhetoric or this way of talking about protection of nature ended up watering down the whole issue for animals and made it more difficult to try to figure out ways to mobilize against specific industries or particular cruel practices.
They don't name animals on the rights of nature. They simply don't do it. There are some other areas of this new proposal of a constitution that name, you know, the animal endangered species and animals in danger of extinction and all that. But that's not new. There are already laws to protect them. If they are respected or not, that's another thing. But regarding animal rights as that, and regarding a general article which would really ban all kind of cruelty against animals in the Constitution? No. Because there, in Ecuador, you can meet people, environmentalists, which love bullfighting. What is the impact of bullfighting, the environmental impact of bullfighting? None. Honestly, none. But it still is violence, still is something that we have used so many arguments, like, for example, it, what can you show to a kid? If you take it to see some guy killing, brutally torturing an animal, a bull, what can you get from there?
Hmm.
So that's why, again, it's very important to make, to establish a difference. And we really wanted to address cruelty in the Constitution, to not allow this cruelty to happen, not against the strays, not against the animals used for human consumption or for the animals used for entertainment.
The animal rights activists weren't successful, as you pointed out, in terms of being able to modify those articles in the Constitution. What are the steps now? Where do animal activists go from this point?
Well, we weren't successful in including these articles. And we were successful in not letting the other article going, the one that would allow ancestral rights and cultural practices happen for the sake of tradition, even if it's cruel. And what we concluded is that we have to be stronger, we have to network more, even more, and we have to keep our cause on our side, like making our organizations stronger, and maybe in the future create a political party. And of course, money is an issue.
Yeah. Can you tell us about how many people are actually involved right now in Anima Naturalis? How much larger would you like to see the organization get, and what are the numbers like right now?
Overall, there are more than 100 members all over these countries. But regarding Ecuador, there are 5 to 10 real active members, and there are other members, but that they participate in the protests and all that. But the really involved people, we are not that many. We are 5 to 10. And Guayaquil, because it's a Guayaquil-based organization for activism. But more than having people joining us, what would be most important is that we really get members who are, really have a compromise for this, who really believe in the cause, and who really take it to their lifestyle. We want vegetarians or vegans as part of our organization. We think it's coherent to defend a bull when you don't eat the meat of the cow. It's not that easy in a country where eating meat is very, very widespread, and you really have to look for people. And you know, it's not like you really have to do some kind of recruiting. Those people who really believe in these things, they come to you.
Ecuador is known, obviously, as a poor country, and there's lots of political problems and issues. And I know that one of the things that you've had people say to you and to the organization, and I was hoping you could respond to it here, although it's unfair within the context of an animal show, I know, but people will say things like, with all these other issues going on, with issues around child poverty, for example, how can you focus on animals? You should be putting your efforts elsewhere.
It's a cost. There's injustice there. There is violence there. It's as important as any other cause. If we tend to think in terms of priorities, believe me, animals wouldn't get anything their way in 100 years in Ecuador. So it's the cause we defend, it's the cause we believe in, and when you care about the boys selling stuff in the street, the impoverished, handicapped person not being well taken care of, and then you think of the stray animal who no one really cares about and no one will care about because there are so few people working for that cause, then you definitely say stand up for that cause, the one that's the least seeking and the least the one that many people can sympathize for, but they don't really take the actions to another level. So it's a very, it's not, it's a even misunderstanding some terms, but still important. You know, this circle of violence we live in, animals are part of it. And of course, impoverished people as well.
We only have a minute left, and I just want to turn it over to you if you wanted to share the website or to offer any last words to our listeners.
Yes, I'd like people to go to, of course, www.animanaturalis.org. And I also like them to visit these two websites from FADA, Friends for Animals Foundation, www.fada-ecuador.org, and also our blog, which is fada-ecuador.blogspot.com, and also to write to the email contacto, which is contacto@fada-ecuador.org, to learn more about this organization in Ecuador, which is the only one that in Guayaquil works, know its nation and sterilization focused, and really doing a rescue the right way they should, very ethical.
Paula, thank you so much.
Thank you, Lauren.
I'm sorry that my Spanish isn't better, or really, I wish that my Spanish existed at all, so we could at least split up the interview a little bit. But I appreciate you bearing with us in English to do the interview, so I really appreciate that.
I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about these issues going on in Ecuador. And I hope really people visit those websites to get more information about it.
Great. And we'd love to talk to you again and find out more about the progress that's being made with the group and other animal groups in Ecuador. So thanks so much.
Thank you, Lauren.
Okay, bye for now.
Goodbye.
We were just speaking with Paula Gilbert. She's an activist with animanaturalis.org is the website. And this show should be archived within about a week. You can check us out at animalvoices.ca for more information about the program. You can send us suggestions for upcoming shows at animalvoices@gmail.com. Please do give us your click for at Podcast Alley for the program if you would like to support us. Send us your vote, podcastalley.com. We would appreciate it. And coming up next is Das Mundo on CIUT 89.5 FM. Thanks for listening.